Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. We're coming to you today from the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. The studio is filled with musicians and instruments and equipment right now. All five members of the JAS Quintet are here. They have a concert coming up in Sioux Falls January 15th and 16th, celebrating the music and legacy of American jazz legend Thelonious Monk. If you're interested in seeing the live show, get your tickets early. Their Miles Davis tribute sold out in 2015. In the studio today, we welcome Jeff Paul. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Joel Shotwell is on saxophone.
Hi.
Andrew Reinhartz has the bass.
Hi.
Jim Spears is here with trumpets.
Hello.
And Daniel Heyer is in the back on the drums.
Hello.
So let's start with you, Jim. Why Thelonious Monk? After doing Miles Davis, why did you pick this particular character to celebrate?
Well, it was a collective decision, and we decided that you can't get anybody more iconic in American jazz than Thelonious Monk. He's such a character, not only his music, but his personal style, his personality. There's a lot of stories to tell. So we thought it'd be fun to just talk a little bit about his life and then play his music.
So when did he come on the scene at first?
Well, he was around early. He was there at the start of the bebop generation. He just didn't get credit for it. He was there with Diz and Charles, Charlie Parker, and all of those guys, but didn't he didn't necessarily get credit for it at the time. So in the 40s, basically. But he went really from the early 40s to almost mid 50s, even towards the end of the 50s, before people started to know Thelonious Monk as a true icon. He didn't really get famous till that time.
So what is it that he is known for today? What's his legacy, do you think?
I'm going to pass it off. One of these guys will tell you. What do you think his legacy is, Joel?
I think Monk's legacy is maybe, I guess, obviously his influence. You know, if you listen to jazz music and play jazz music, you recognize Monk's playfulness in his compositions, his originality. Monk is Monk no matter what, how many years he did it for, you know, the decades he did it. He was always his character, you know. I mean, you hear his music and you know it's Monk immediately, and people love it, and people continue to reinvent it and play it and share it, and he's just very unique. So I think his legacy is, you know, one of those really, really unique artists. So,
and he stuck with it too. That's what I think. You said that he started composing in the early 40s, and he stayed true to his style from that time on. I mean, he was Monk from the beginning to the end. So I think there's something special about that. He was really he was committed to his style, his sound. That's all he could do. And that's why it was so unique.
So let's tell a little bit about the show and the format of the show, and then we'll let you play. So
sure.
Who wants to tell me when I go to the concert, what am I going to expect? Straight music, some narration, how does it work?
Yeah, so it's kind of a combination of the two. We have Katrina Lair McKinney, who's a great friend of ours, and we actually originally met her. She was helping us out when she worked for the Jazz and Blues Society for a lot of years. She was instrumental in helping get the Jazz Diversity Project started, which we go throughout the state. Actually, a lot of the people in this band, we go throughout the state and play for middle school kids all around and do kind of a lecture and performance series there. But Katrina will be kind of helping guide us through the night, talking about Monk's life, his origin, kind of a few stories from when he was around, and then talking about the legacy. But it'll be mostly performing, you know, probably about 70% playing and about 30% talking. There's food service, there's drinks, so it's nice. It's kind of an informal atmosphere in the basement of the market downtown Sioux Falls, where you know, kind of trying to make it seem a little bit like a jazz club, except it's a featured performance with a lot of performing and then just a little bit of context provided just to kind of place Monk in his kind of in his history.
All right, you want to play a song?
Yeah.
Give us an idea of what you're going to play.
We're going to play one of Monk's most famous tunes called Straight No Chaser. And like I said, it's what we call the show. It's a really iconic tune of his. A lot of people play it, and it's a lot of fun. So
I figure we better play this one.
We probably better do it,
since it's the name of the show.
All right, Straight No Chaser from the JAS Quintet.
One, two, three.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Dakota Midday, the JAS Quintet playing Straight No Chaser by Thelonious Monk. I'm going to give Jeff Paul just a minute to get up and find a microphone, and we'll talk to him a little bit. Jeff, what I'm wondering is, Jeff is over on there on the keyboards.
Hi there.
What was your first experience being introduced to Thelonious Monk? Can you remember?
I actually kind of can remember. My dad gave me a cassette tape when I was probably about 11 or 12 years old, and just starting to explore improvising on piano. And I'm no jazz historian, but for some reason I've always really identified with Monk's piano style when I listen to him. He was always so creative and so expressive and seemed to have no fear of kind of innovating and not that he had a disregard for the chord changes and musical structures, but he kind of disregarded the chord changes and some of the traditional structures, and I just always thought that was great.
Did he have a classical music component to his life? Does anyone know? Jim, do you know if he had studied classical music as well, or did he just do this in a vacuum and create his own thing?
Well, he did take lessons, I know that, at an early age from a teacher in his neighborhood who I'm sure taught him classically, you know, that style of teaching. And then he studied, like I think all of the jazz guys at that point, you know, studied a lot of the kind of currently popular classical composers and liked what they were doing, and then that was reciprocated. They liked what the jazz guys were doing too. But.
Didn't his teacher say too at one time, like, I just can't teach him because he knows everything?
Yeah.
I can't teach him anymore.
Yeah, she said that I don't know what else to teach him. He's kind of gotten beyond me, so at an early age.
Yeah.
So, Jeff, what are the challenges of approaching the keyboards in a Thelonious Monk piece for you as an artist and musician?
There are many. I mean, his sense of rhythm carrying across different kinds of bar groupings and things like that is always pretty challenging and pretty tricky. But on the other hand, once you kind of get to sort of a patient spot mentally, then things happen a little bit more naturally. It's a little bit easier. I think Monk is kind of simultaneously really difficult and then also really easy once you get in the right mind frame.
So what are you going to play? You're going to do a little solo piece for us now.
I will do that. I'm going to play a little rendition of Round Midnight.
Round Midnight. All right. We'll give him a minute to sit back down there from the microphone. Jeffrey Paul.
Thank you.
Jeff Paul, Round Midnight by Thelonious Monk. We're going to take a quick break. If you're just joining us, thanks for listening to Dakota Midday. We'll be right back on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. The JAS Quintet is in the studio today playing some Thelonious Monk. Let's get back to our conversation, but before that, I think maybe we'll just get back to some more music.
Sure.
What do you want to play for us next? Joel Shotwell.
We're going to do a song called Rhythmining, and it's one of, Monk only did, I think, five or six, he copied the chords from one song and made another song, which was a huge thing that bebop artists did. Monk only did it like five times, otherwise he was totally original. This is one of those, and it's rhythm changes, so I got rhythm, na-na-na-na.
By the way, I'll sing this one. If we sell out, we might then be able to have Joel sing. So if everyone comes, then we'll encourage him to sing.
And I just want to add that Andrew Reinhardt was promising dancing on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen that yet, so hopefully by the end of the hour,
I forgot
there will
watching.
Also be some dancing.
This is radio. We didn't know we had to
dance. Joel will sing, Andrew will dance. But first, let's play some music. Give me the name of the song again, please.
Rhythmining.
Of the JAS Quintet playing Thelonious Monk. I'm going to throw a question out to Andrew Reinhartz here because we haven't picked on him nearly enough. Obviously, the music of Monk is technically advanced, but also a huge creativity level. I'm just always fascinated with how you, as a jazz musician in particular, feed your creative life and what you sort of do to work on that creativity. Mm-hmm.
Interesting question, and I think that actually matches Monk a lot because, you know, he was the utmost musician, but he was always such a curious guy, and I think, in general, creativity is almost more about curiosity than anything else. I think it's being just anything that comes across your way, trying to figure it out a little bit more and just dive straight into it and see what you can find out. And then take all of those things that you've learned and kind of synthesize them into something new. You know, I think a lot of creativity is just taking your influences and reconstructing them in kind of a new way through a new filter from a different perspective. But I mean, that was kind of Monk. I mean, he was always known as he was really inquisitive. I mean, he was always, even later in life when some of his kind of, he had a little bit of mental illness that kind of came out more and more as he grew older. But even then, I mean, he was always having interesting conversations with people, and he was always a voracious reader from what I've been reading about him. And so I think, I mean, similarly, that's, you know, it seems like a lot of times other music inspires me, but a lot of times what inspires me the most musically is non-musical things, you know. It's visual art, which I'm horrible at. I love it, and I can't draw a straight line to save my life, let alone something beautiful. But, you know, so it's kind of taking all these life experiences and then putting them into a different medium.
And hugely collaborative.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's always kind of the bane of the. I mean, part of me wishes I was a poet or something where I could just go away into the woods and come back with a book a couple years later. But it's what really gets me excited about music is that collaborative element, especially improvised music like jazz, where I mean, no one wants to hear a bass solo all night, first and foremost. But also, it's not about just what I have to say. It's really about what we say together, and it's about supporting what everyone is doing and kind of making this new unit together and just having wide open ears.
Joel Shotwell, do you want to add a little something about what it's like to work with this particular group?
Oh, yeah. I've waited, like, you know, since I've moved back here, like 10 or 15 years for this group. So if that says a lot, it should. But it's just nice. Everybody's in this particular group has, you know, the same attitude. You know, we live this music. We've, you know, just listened to it all the time. We want to create something. We're okay with experimenting. Something goes wrong, we're all gonna fix it together, you know, on the fly. And actually, that's what's fun. Sometimes we mess things up on purpose, you know. and everybody, the biggest thing is everybody here too has the skills to do that, which it takes a long time to develop that and a lot of work, but these guys all have the ears and the facility to do all the stuff that, you know, I really love doing with these people, so.
Show is January 15th and 16th. Where can I get tickets?
Tickets are on sale at the Pavilion box office. You can get them online through that, or you can go right to that box office. You can get them at the door, but when we did it last year in Sioux Falls and in Rapid, it was pretty much sold out. So it would be wise to get them ahead of time, I think.
All right, you've been listening to the JAS Quintet, and that is going to be our Dakota Midday for today. We hope it served you. I'd like to thank our guests, Denise Ross, Roger Whittle, and the musicians of the quintet. Tomorrow's program offers vaudevillian performer and self-declared lunatic Tomasz Kubinek. There's a new grand piano at historic Homestake Opera House in Deadwood. Aaron Bosch discusses empowering women in business, and the author of All Hands on Deck 8 Essential Lessons for Building a Culture of Ownership is in Huron. Joe Tai joins us tomorrow as well. Meet me right here at noon Central, 11 Mountain, and we're going to invite the JAS Quintet to play us out. What are you going to play for us?
We're actually going to do a tune called Consecutive Seconds that was written by Tio Macero, a big producer in the jazz world that everybody worked with, and he wrote it for Monk on an album, actually hoping it would be a pop hit. But it's a Monk-esque song. I thought it was cool. So,
for South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.
Just through the head, all the way through.